It is October 6th. It is a Wednesday, a day late, dollar short. You know the routine. I apologize for not having this out sooner, but the Urban Meyer news and some YouTube stuff we had going coupled with a sick four-year-old pushed us a day back, and we got to do better on Menace to Sports. But thank you for holding out, waiting, for your patience. We are here, episode, what is this, 166. Week 6 of college football coming up. We got a lot to talk about. Huge game, which we're not going to preview. This is not the preview episode, right? That will still come tomorrow. Normal time. Iowa, Penn State this weekend. Going to be a monster game. You talk about, in my opinion, so before we get to the show, there's three pivotal games in the Midwest, right? Four pivotal games. One just happened. Cincinnati, Notre Dame. We'll talk about that one. Then we have Iowa, Penn State this weekend. And then on October 30th, you have Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, Penn State. Going to be a monster Halloween weekend. And if you're looking for something to do, we're throwing a massive Halloween bash for what's supposed to be or should be a night game, the Penn State game, down at the Point on Lane. Braxton Miller, myself, going to be a Halloween monster party. So come hang out, man. We got tickets on sale already on Eventbrite. It's a tailgate Halloween party, a watch party to watch the game. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be a badass night. So come hang out with us, man. Check us out. It's on my social media, on Braxton's social media, or just go to Eventbrite and type in Braxton Miller or charging with a one for the I, and come hang out with us. Also, if you're interested, if you're hanging out this weekend, if you want to come down, we're going to be down also doing a tailgate for the Maryland game. So come check that out. We'll be down there. Doors will open at 10 a.m. We got great food from Revelry Tavern, which is an awesome sports bar here in Dublin. Just bomb food. And then the Shade on the Canal wings, which are just absolutely phenomenal wings. And a bunch of other food, all-you-can-eat food. And then two drink tickets for $50. You can't beat it anywhere in Columbus. Plus, you're right in the middle of the action. Varsity Club's right next door. I mean, just people everywhere, people watching at its finest. And then bucket darts. If you haven't seen this game that Braxton and his company have put out, it's awesome. You put a beer down and you throw darts at it. And if you hit it, you got to shotgun it, all kinds of stuff. So really going to be a blast. Come hang out with us. Come check it out. It's on Eventbrite, charging on lane. Before we get to the show, obviously a little housekeeping. I want to talk to you one more time about Prediction Strike. If you haven't heard about it, haven't checked it out, you got to check it out. It's badass. So I'm going to give you my spiel on Prediction Strike. It's a little sports, I guess, investing into players. It's called Prediction Strike. And I told you about it last episode, and I'm already on it, and it is badass. So essentially what you do is, it's like a sports stock market where you can buy and sell shares of your favorite athletes, build a portfolio. You can build your own mutual fund based on athletic success, essentially. Some of these players that you can get right now, so I'll tell you a couple guys I picked up. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is $2.32 per share of Clyde Edwards-Helaire. So he is down from last year because he struggled a little bit. I think he's going to bounce back. That offense is going to get in sync. So I took him. Jamar Chase, $7.80 a share. He's going to explode. He's going to have a great career. J.K. Dobbins, because of the injury. Now, this you won't see return on investment this year, but he's $5.20 a share. It's really cool, man. You go on, like last year, I think I talked about it. Jonathan Taylor was $2.15 a share in mid-November and ended the season at $6.15 a share. So that's 186% on your investment. It is cool as hell. You got to go check it out. It's really fun. I'm already having fun with it. I've only been doing it for 2 weeks now, and I told you about it last week. So get started today by downloading Prediction Strike's new app in the App Store or by visiting PredictionStrike.com. Sign up with my promo code MENACE to receive a free share of an athlete when you deposit $20 or more. Just go to PredictionStrike.com and use code MENACE and come play with us, man. It is a blast. Well, there you have it. Go check that out. It's really a cool thing. I'm playing it right now. I'll have to get you my portfolios maybe next episode. I don't have it in front of me. My portfolios of players that I'm building. But anyways, really excited to talk about these games. Also going to have on here, I'm going to put the audio from our YouTube show, Coaching the Bullet. Johnny the Bullet from Scarlet and Great joins me. And we talk about, it's kind of the anti-Paul Feinbaum show, right? Where Paul Feinbaum, you know, just jerks off the SEC all day long. So this is our Midwest response to the SEC bias Paul Feinbaum show with smaller ears, better looking, more knowledgeable, and more entertaining co-hosts. So I'm going to put that on here because I think it's a great show. You guys should check it out weekly on YouTube. I'll probably sprinkle it in here and there on the podcast just to get more people to listen to it and try to grow that brand because it's really something that I'm passionate about. I want this platform, Menace to Sports, to be the I guess, the arch nemesis of Paul Feinbaum, because Paul Feinbaum can't get Nick Saban's dick out of his mouth, and it's disgusting. Plus, the guy doesn't know anything. He's miserable to look at. He's annoying voice. Like, I don't know why people listen to him, other than if you're a Bama fan, he says things that you like about your team. So we are the anti-Paul Feinbaum here on this show. He can go fuck himself, San Diego. But enough about that. Let's get to the show.
Watches downfield. It's Olave. He's got a touchdown. Ohio State.
Why am I talking to you? You're not even in football.
Yeah.
Did you even play to the high school level? You took journalism. It's a bunch of nerds interrupting people who know what they're doing.
Goes to the corner, dives to the corner. He didn't get there. No, they say he did. And Indiana wins.
The commissioner could literally punt a baby with his wingtips on. I'm still going to watch on Sunday.
Looking for the deep ball. Touchdown, Ohio State, Garrett Olsen.
I don't condone the man's actions, but it's football. I have to watch it. This is all I have.
On first down, it's Breece Hall. He doesn't go down. He might go all the way. He stays on his feet again.
I wasn't going to hit a woman, but then that guy in the Ravens did it, so I guess it's okay.
All right, so here's how I'm going to do this episode, because I want to get my thoughts on the Urban Meyer situation and then my extended conversation with Johnny the Bullet on the podcast for you guys. So I'm just going to put the audio from our YouTube show about the Urban Meyer situation, kind of my thoughts, my instant reaction. Moral story is we shouldn't give a fuck. That's the problem. And Urban's also an absolute idiot and didn't handle it. I mean, with honesty and he looked like a crybaby, but other than that, I think this should be a non-issue. We're attacking a man's personal life. I mean, he obviously made a mistake, and you know, the video went viral. Let it go viral. I don't know why we need to call for his job, especially because there's countless examples of coaches that we champion and praise in the media that have done stupid shit. I mean, albeit have a baby out of wedlock or have full-blown affairs and relationships. I mean, all kinds of shit that we just turn a blind eye to or forget about, right? That's the reality. We forget about it, right? Sean Payton has an affair. We forget about it. And then it's like, Sean Payton is so great. Look at the Saints. They're great. Drew Brees. They're awesome. And it's like, bro, do you care about affairs and adultery or do you not? Because we're all confused now. Everything is, mainstream media is confusing. You will never have that problem here. I will always shoot it straight, be raw, real, uncut, don't give a fuck. That's just the reality. So I'm going to throw this YouTube video on. We're going to get a quick message from a sponsor somewhere in this episode. And then I want to get you the conversation Johnny the Bullet and I had. And then after all of that, I'm going to give you kind of my thoughts on the games from this past weekend. Should be a pretty cool hybrid episode. So let's get to the Urban Meyer conversation. It is Tuesday, October 5th. Welcome to Menace to Sports. I am Zach Smith, your host, also a former employee of Urban Meyer, who was fired by Urban conveniently and coincidentally. Now, as new details have emerged in Bootygate, right? Urban Meyer is caught on video, I guess, getting grinded on by a girl. And this is national news, big news, huge scandal. Urban Meyer had a drink, might have been a little intoxicated, and a hot chick rubbed on him. And it is the world. I mean, it broke Facebook, let's be honest. But if you stay till the end of this video, I'm going to detail some never before heard details of what happened in the 24 hours after Urban Meyer found out about this viral video and some of the stuff that went on with the girl who shot the video. Really interesting stuff. But I want to talk about this video first and foremost. Let's go to the timeline, right? There was an initial video of some girl dancing in front of and then moving back and rubbing her butt on Urban Meyer's arm, and his hand might have been in an inappropriate place. That's left for viewer discretion, right? And the question that I had after I watched it was, why the fuck do we care, right? The initial video was fairly innocent on Urban's part. Like, could he have gotten up and walked away? Sure. But did he sit there and bend the girl over and make her see God? No. Like, I don't know why we're so concerned about Urban getting his arm rubbed on by a random girl's butt. And then The second part of this, the second thing I thought is, who the fuck are we to judge what and know what kind of relationship Urban Meyer is in? Now, I happen to know it is certainly a committed and loving relationship, and it's a monogamous relationship, but it's 2021. For all you know, his wife lets him go out and have fun, do what he wants, and she might do the same, right? And I like I said, I know that's not the case, but why are we making a big deal of this? What if that's perfectly normal in their household? And three, some people are screaming that I have to call them a Martian because they identify as someone from Mars. Those same people are going to judge Urban Meyer and his decisions and are not going to acknowledge the fact that he could have a different lifestyle than their own and that it's not wrong. Like, what in that video was morally wrong, right? If he was some phenom coach right now and was 4-0, the question I have for you in the comments below is, would we care? Yes or no? If he was 4-0, would anyone give a shit, right? Because if I'm not mistaken, Joey Freshwater's actual alias or actual persona in Lane Kiffin is still coaching at Ole Miss, isn't he? He was banging girls at Alabama left and right, cheated on his wife. Eddie Orgeron had a bunch of pictures taken with co-eds, and he's still the coach at LSU. Now, he might get fired because he's losing, but not because he was hanging out with co-eds or bumping and grinding. Bobby Petrino was banging a chick in the administration department at Arkansas. Granted, he got fired, but he was the head coach at Louisville not long after that, right? Major Applewhite was railing one of his student trainers. He got to be a head coach later. And let's not forget, Bill Belichick had a full-blown mistress of years, a relationship that his wife knew about and eventually divorced him over. He had a full-blown relationship with another woman. Sean Payton had an ongoing mistress just in 2011, right? Same time he had Bounty Gate going on, he had extramarital booty gate going on. So I don't understand, why is this an issue? Why are we talking about it? I bet Nick Saban would have an affair if that guy even liked the fuck. I mean, I think he only likes to coach football and like pound his face into the wall. I don't understand. Here's the reality. People don't care about this shit. They don't care about Urban, you know, sticking his hand on a girl's butt. They don't care about that. They only care about perspective and the media mob in this moment, right? They want to fire people to appease the media mob and end the coverage, right? End the Jaguar logo from being on ESPN. That's the only reason people care about this right now. That, and they have this disdain for Urban Meyer, right? And then the apology. Let's listen to what Urban had to say.
I just apologize to the team and staff and for being a distraction, just stupid. And so I explained everything that happened and owned it and, you know, just a stupid should not have myself in that kind of position.
Urban, did you fly back with the team, or did you stay in?
No, I stayed to see the grandkids, and we all went to dinner that night at the restaurant, and then there was a big group next to our restaurant, and they wanted me to come over and take pictures, and I did. And they were trying to pull me out on the dance floor, screwing around, and I should have left.
How did the team react? I mean, they're probably pretty event. Reactionary, or, you know, how did they take it, your apology?
Well, I've always been so defensive of them. You know, I remember when Trevor told me he was going to go to Vegas for his bachelor party. I mean, I was just, my gosh, man, be careful and surround yourself, and because I've seen this happen. And I just, so the team, I spoke to a bunch of leaders one-on-one, spoke to all the players. They're good. They were focused on Tennessee, and I apologized again for being a distraction. Coach should not be a distraction.
So he said they were trying to get him on the dance floor to screw around. I'm going to be honest. I had no problem with the video. I had no problem with what he did. Nor do I think anyone should give a shit until he started talking, right? Until he spoke. I mean, the guy just can't take accountability. He didn't mention a girl. He didn't mention the girl. And I mean, it is what it is. But I mean, it's all right, man. You're a dude. You have a dick. You were out, had a couple too many drinks, made a mistake. All good. But wait. And then there's more. There was a second shooter. There was another angle, another clip, right? This time it looks like Urban's going knuckle deep inside the girl, one of her orifices. And now it's like, oh God, here we go again. Rerun the headlines for another 24 to 48 hours, right? The reality is this, people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. I remember when the investigation happened into me and Urban's wife was, we know Zach has a drinking problem. I'm scared of how he's going to react. He's going out at night. Yeah, people in glass houses, shells, probably shouldn't throw stones, huh? You probably should take your white wig off and worry about what's in your own home. That's the reality. This is a private matter that I shouldn't be making a video about. We shouldn't even be talking about. That's the reality of the today's day and age, right? Thou shalt not wear a white wig, and only God can judge me. The biggest problem of all of it is Urban's acting like this is a bigger deal than it is. He's blowing it out of proportion. Coaches cheat on wives. I've been around hundreds of them, and that's not even what he did to our knowledge, right? He might not have cheated on his wife, but coaches across the country cheat on their wives all the time. None of them get fired for it until the media blows it up, and then they don't get fired for cheating. They get fired to stop the firestorm that the media creates, right? Right now, Urban's on the verge, if he hasn't already, of losing all credibility with anyone in the media, his players, because he's walking around with droopy ears and his tail tucked between his legs, trying to minimize what it was. Like, dude, you made a mistake. You got sauced and a smoking hot chick 30 years younger than you wanted the sausage. Like, shit happens. We get it. Players are laughing now. Media's blowing it out of proportion. And here's what I don't understand. Why does the media hate Urban Meyer so much? I've been around coaches across the industry, and there's far worse men and people than Urban Meyer. I mean, he's a God-fearing, good person. He really is. He's mortal. He's human. He's imperfect. He made a mistake. He's made many other mistakes, right? I've yet to meet someone who hasn't. Now, the reaction was a little ridiculous, right? The girl shot the video because she thought it was crazy and funny. Took it home, showed her husband. He was like, holy shit, that's Urban Meyer, right? He texts it to his group chat with friends, and then they text it to other group chats. And this is how the firestorm starts. Once it started, the staff and Chris Corso from Urban Meyer's Pint House went to the surveillance footage, identified the girl who took the video, got her contact information, and started, I won't say harassing, but calling her over a dozen times in the first 24 hours. I don't know what they're calling about, what they expect. What, are they going to ban the poor girl because Urban was getting his bump and grind on? But that is the type of shit that goes on when you're a high-profile person like Urban Meyer. So that's just my two cents in the situation. Wanted to throw it out there. Thank you for tuning in. If you haven't yet, please subscribe to the channel, like this video, and comment below. Do you think Urban Meyer is going to be the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars? I don't know. At the end of the year, let alone next year, at the end of the year, will he still be the head coach? Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next episode.
There you have it. Those are my thoughts. I didn't want to re-record or regurgitate the same information twice in different words. So I figured I'd just throw it on there. I thought I did a decent job displaying my opinion on the matter in that video. So I wanted to get it to you. We'll be right back after a quick message. I know I'm trying. So I think I told you before, I'm trying to front load some of the two ads that we do every show so that we can get to raw content the rest of the episode. So I'm going to get a quick word from one of our sponsors in MyBookie. If you're a gambler or want a sports bet, they're a great overseas option. So quick message from MyBookie. Then we'll be back with the coach and the bullet and finish off with a little analytics and talk about the past weekend of college football.
The NFL is back in action, and so is winning season at MyBookie. With over $500,000 in contest prize money, winning season makes the big games better and the victories even sweeter. Head to MyBookie.ag and choose from a variety of boosts, contests, and promotions up for grabs, highlighted by the crown jewel of winning season, the famed MyBookie Super Contest. It only costs $10 to enter. Pick five games against the spread each week. Each win earns you a point, and each point gets you closer to the grand prize. If you missed out on week one, don't even sweat it, because entries are still open, and all it takes is one solid week to get you back in the mix. Don't just take my word for it. Join now and start your winning season with MyBookie today. In order to get you started, make your first deposit at MyBookie.ag and use our promo code Menace, M-E-N-A-C-E, to instantly receive double your deposit. That's double your money to double your winnings with your first ever deposit using promo code Menace. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie.
Here we are, Menace to Sports, welcoming back Johnny the Bullet from the Scarlet and Great Empire for week six, a coach in the Bullet. So much to talk about, some off topic, some on topic, as the Big Ten really is the leading, I guess, footprint in the country right now in the national rankings with six teams in the top 11. You know, it's funny, and I want to start with this conversation, Johnny. I didn't prep you for this, but you'll have no problem discussing it. First of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm excited. Six weeks.
I guess it is our show. So welcome to the channel on our show. But I just want to talk just initially, because it'll lead into my kind of our lead story, but just the way the media paints narratives, right, as it applies to football, as right now there are six teams, right? You have Iowa at number three, Penn State at four, Cincinnati at what, five or six? Six. Ohio State at seven, Michigan at eight, Michigan State at 11. So six teams in the top 11. Over half of the top 11 teams are Midwest football teams or Big Ten football teams. And somehow at the end of the year, when one of those teams loses to the other six, it'll be, well, Michigan State's not any good. They lost to Ohio State, right? But in the SEC, when it happens, Georgia loses to Alabama, the narrative is, oh, well, I mean, Georgia's only losses to Alabama. It's like, wait a minute. You can't have it both ways, right? Like, just the way the media frames things for fiscal and financial benefit is, it's really shocking that more of the country doesn't see it for what it is.
It is. And I think you've probably read my tweet from several days ago when I said, when the Big Ten eventually cannibalizes each other,
yep,
because you can't stay undefeated when you play each other. You can't.
It's not possible, by the way.
Yeah, it will be they were never that good. And when right, the SEC cannibalizes each other, because again, they have to play each other, event not as often as the Big Ten's crossing over in the regular season, right, but still, it'll be, oh, took a loss because of elite competition. And it's just like Paul Feinbaum. I'm not so, I saw two tweets. I guess I should check whether these tweets are real given recent trolling, but I saw that he said, like, I'm not sold on the Big Ten being so good. Da, da, da. And then he also said, I think the Big Ten might be the best conference top to bottom. Which is it? Which is it? Have we just sold out for clicks so much that we don't even really know where we stand?
Yeah, well, that's what happens, right? Mainstream media, it's all about clicks. You see it with RJ Young. RJ Young had a decent, I mean, you know, you could call it what you want to call it. I thought he was somewhat entertaining, a little annoying, but had decent, you know, insights every now and then. He jumps over to Fox and all of a sudden, like, he has Ohio State at like 16. You're like, what are you doing? Like, and it doesn't entirely add up. I mean, he's weighing in like, this team has a loss, so they can't be ahead of an undefeated team. You're like, what? They absolutely can be ahead of Oklahoma State. Yes, they can.
Yeah, the biggest thing he holds his hat on is what were they ranked at the time. And that's just, he went from being, like you said, interesting to, all right, RJ, you just sound dumb. You really sound objectively dumb.
Everyone knows my opinion of mainstream media and really just sports media in general. But I will shout out the one person that is somewhat pretty mainstream. He's a pretty big deal, is Josh Pate from Late Kick. I think every time I listen to him, I'm like, you know what, this guy, that's a great point. Like that's on point. Like that's a great, he has good perspective. So I would encourage people to check him out outside of Scarlet and Great and Menace to Sports. He does a really, really good job. Hopefully he doesn't get picked up by ESPN and, you know, forced to put on the KKK outfit or whatever they all have to wear. It's the opposite, I guess, of the KKK.
I guess. Yeah. Outfit. You have to spend your life looking for, forcing other people into KKK outfits and exposing them.
Right. All right, but let's talk about it. First thing, the hot button topic is the Urban Meyer situation. Urban Meyer goes to his pint house, is seen frolicking with a woman 30 years younger than him, doing that pose right there, fist pumping, double fist pumping. And I'm just curious, I put out a YouTube yesterday, and I think I was pretty candid and pretty honest. You know, I wasn't an Urban Meyer apologist, but I also attacked the mainstream media mainly because that's what I do. And that's my life's work. But it's just amazing to me that all this noise and all this talk about Urban Meyer, like he might've touched her butt a little bit on a cell phone video, and he might've had a couple drinks, and it's like, they are calling for his head, calling for his job. But Deshaun Watson can get accused of sexual assault, rape against 24 women. And it's like pretty much silent about it. It's more like, hey, do you think they're going to let him play? And
you're like, yeah, is Miami actually going to sign him or not? There's no like moral high ground there.
Right. And you look at some of these other, like LSU's, you know, sexual scandal that really got no tick on the mainstream media. I mean, some of the things that have went on, and I even talked about, you know, Bill Belichick had a big time affair. Sean Payton had a big time affair. Hugh Jackson had a child out of wedlock before he was the head coach of the Browns. I mean, it's like these things go on and it's not for nothing. All of a sudden Urban Meyer, like, lets some chick rub her butt on his arm while he's just sitting there. And it's like, huge news. Guy's a terrible person.
She seems so upset about it. I mean, she seems so upset that Urban was touching her.
And Right. She seemed so upset. I mean, she was certainly backing that thing up on him anyways, like if we're being honest.
Right.
So I just curious your thoughts, just kind of where am I off on this? Like people are almost calling me an urban apologist, but it's like, I'm not standing up for the guy. Like, I think it's hilarious that he's in this situation considering he wanted to condemn me for my situation. I think it's even funnier that Shelly has to go through this after her texts get displayed across the country about how, you know, I'm a drunk and I'm out there like womenizing.
He scares me.
And it's like, I sit here and I'm like, what is wrong with this world? Even people like Shelly Meyer, who I do believe think like we all should let God judge their faith based and that it's not their place, but they still do it. And then it comes back around on them and it's like, oh man, why are people judging us? It's like, I don't know. 'Cause that's what everyone does.
Yeah. I'm not shocked at this. I am a little, but I guess I shouldn't be. First foremost, like most people know me as probably, I try to be a very moral, upright guy. So yeah, I don't agree. Like I have a picture of Urban on the wall. Doesn't mean I agree with everything he's ever said, done, or said or will do. He would be the first to tell you, yeah, I shouldn't have been hammered and around people like that. And in a situation where I'm inebriated, where otherwise sober, maybe I get up and leave. Yeah. Sure. And he shouldn't have been in that situation. He would even tell you that. But to your point, for like the pearl clutching, and you see the gentleman with Dan Orlovsky. I don't know if you saw that clip. I'm not sure that, but he just, I mean, it was such a disgusting virtue signal. We need to fire Urban today because he brought in a racist strength coach and he brought in Tim Tebow to get preseason snaps. And now this, and I'm like, why? So adultery is fireable now. And it wasn't even adultery. Like, I guarantee you Urban Meyer is a more faithful man to his wife than most coaches are to theirs.
I can guarantee you for a fact that that is the case for the most part, not everyone, but I worked with, I don't know, 100 of them.
Yeah. And you have every motive in the world right now to throw Urban under the bus and you don't.
Right.
Your take is pretty. Yeah. It was silly. Yeah. He shouldn't have been there. Yeah. It is kind of maybe funny karma from your standpoint,
right?
But at the same time, like, you want to act like he's done something that all these other coaches don't do. If you're upset, I was thinking this on the way home, and I use this term too much, but it's how I feel. If you're really that upset and it really makes you sad what Urban did and you think he should be fired, you are soft. You are a soft person.
Doubt. There's no doubt. And the reality is the CFO of or CEO of Cardinal Health goes out and has some chick rubbing up on him. He's not, no one at work even knows, let alone is it fireable. But
I just want to bring Meyer is still an analyst. No one would care.
No, that's true too. That's true too. And if we really want to get down to it, if Urban Meyer was 2-2, no one would care, right? He's 0-4. That's the problem here. And that's why Bill Belichick and Sean Payton are still driving that ship in New Orleans and New England, because no one gives a shit. They're winning.
I never heard crocodile tears when Lane Kiffin got hired at Mississippi.
No, of course not, because they were excited about hottie toddy Joey Freshwater running that, you know, high-powered no-huddle offense with the RPOs.
Absolutely.
So here's my next question. The more recent news, I guess that news is a day old, so it's extremely old. It's archaic now. Ryan Day shows up to his press conference today in the exact same outfit that Urban Meyer was wearing. Is it just the most savage move ever, or was it just completely naive?
I can't believe. Well, first of all, somebody said it was the same like game worn pullover, and I'm like, no. Those two guys are different sizes. They got to be Urban's a little bit smaller.
It's certainly not Urban's pullover, but yeah, it is the exact same pullover that was given to both coaches by the equipment staff with a polo underneath. Like, it's the same exact look. And you know, Ryan saw the video. Everyone saw the video. I talked to coaches on staff that were asking about the video and saw the video. Like, everyone saw it. So did he put it on purpose?
I would not think that Ryan Day would troll the guy that purposely left the program to him. unless they're like buddies like that. Like, I don't know. If you got into some hot water, Zach, knowing you like I know you, and I know you're the victim of some unnecessary barbs, yeah, maybe I might throw a little barb at you like that just in good fun. But man, that seems a little too, that's almost like too close to home to mess with your buddy about, yeah, right?
There's no doubt. There's no doubt. I just thought it was hilarious.
It was a great coincidence.
Yeah. If our production team does a decent job, we will have put a picture of it up in the show, but that's not always what happens around here at Menace to Sports. Scarlett and Great and Chat Sports would have comparison pictures up throughout this whole thing, but never mind that. So let's talk about some football before we just rant about Urban and social justice all day long. Cincinnati, huge win. You're wearing the shirt. Let's see it. Show it off. I mean, is that Nike Under Armour? It's got to be. Looks like a really nice t-shirt.
It's it's going to go. It is not Nike or Under Armour. I was not going to spring for that for this show. But yeah, it's Cincinnati. That is the proper pronunciation. Cincinnati, the Bearcats, who controlled Notre Dame, mm-hmm, who did what I thought Wisconsin would do to them. The box score, I don't think, is indicative of how bad this game should have been. 30 to 17? This 2 missed field goals. Mm-hmm. This game was 17-0. 8 minutes left in the third quarter. This was a controlling. This was Big Brother holding you down and making you beg for mercy.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt. And I think what it was kind of what we talked about it was going to be, right? Is that Cincinnati had a great defense. Notre Dame has a really good defense. You can't discount that. I mean, they held Cincinnati. I mean, Cincinnati was terrible on third down, couldn't run the ball. Desmond Ridder was okay. He was good. He wasn't anything exceptional, but it really came down to Cincinnati's offense was just better than Notre Dame's offense. So both teams struggled offensively, Cincinnati was the one pushing through it and continuing to move the ball. And so as I look at it, I'm sitting here like, all right, so Cincinnati now has won their two games that I said they needed to win to make the playoffs, right? They had to beat Indiana, who now we find out is not as good as people hoped they would be. And then they got to beat Notre Dame, right? If they can do that at Notre Dame, that is a signature win that Luke Fickell needs. Now they got to play Temple at home, UCF at home. They got to go at Navy, at Tulane, Tulsa at home, at USF. SMU at home is really their biggest game left. SMU is the only ranked opponent. And then at ECU. So on paper, Cincinnati should win out. Does that get them in the playoffs? That's the question. Like, will a one loss, let's say Ohio State team or Oklahoma team or a Georgia or Alabama, right? Because they're going to have to play eventually. Will Cincinnati get put in over them? Because that's what we're talking about right now. Is that even possible?
It may be. So, look, I think you have the SEC champ is absolutely in.
For sure.
If the SEC runner-up only has a close loss in that game, they're likely in. We know how they'll do it. They're likely in. Yeah. So that dwindles it down. A one-loss Big Ten champ or no-loss Big Ten champ would be in. But I really think the outlier here is Oklahoma, and as unimpressive as they've looked, even if they've got to lose a game this year.
I think they're going to lose this weekend in the Red River Shootout to Texas. I think Sarkisian beats them.
Yeah, so look, they've had 3 straight one-score games against unranked opponents. So I think Cincinnati can edge a Notre Dame an Oklahoma or a Pac-12 to get in. They will need some style points against one of those lesser teams. You hope you don't see Navy, you know, having to defend a triple option in midseason. That's not going to be fun. I'm glad it's Luke Fickell, though, to lead them, to prepare them for that. But yeah, some style points in an undefeated season, like, I think they're in. Let me ask you this, Zach. Aren't you really prepared with this front-loaded schedule? Like, when you go play Eastern Carolina or whoever, aren't you pretty tuned up to really go beat the brakes off these lesser schools?
Yeah, see, it's the problem they're going to have is there's a great chance for a letdown week, right? That week where you're playing a team that's, you know, 4-3, and you know, they lost to a couple questionable teams, and you feel like you're King Ding-a-ling walking around. You beat Notre Dame, you beat Indiana, you're going to go to the playoffs, and you have a letdown week, right? That's what they have to avoid, and that's all on coaching. I mean, you saw it when we lost to Iowa after the double overtime win against Penn State. Like, that, we didn't lock those kids back into the fact that if they didn't bring their A game, they could lose. Like, these teams, they're not great teams, but they're capable of beating someone, and so that's That's really what I think Cincinnati has to avoid. And I agree with you. I think the cool thing about the SEC this year for the Big Ten and for Cincinnati is you're pretty much out of the business of that backdoor team from the same side of the conference as a Bama or Georgia, right? Florida ain't making the playoffs. After what we watched, Arkansas and Ole Miss are not making the playoffs. You know, that team that doesn't make it to Atlanta, but only has one loss to Bama, and it was a close loss. Like, nope, Arkansas blown out, right? Kentucky beat Florida. That ain't going to fly. So maybe, can Kentucky, undefeated Kentucky, if they only lose to Georgia, can they sneak in? Probably not over a Cincinnati, right? But that's the narrative that the SEC is missing this year, is that one loss team like a Texas A&M that just lost to Bama by 7 and didn't get to play in Atlanta, and they can sneak in the back door.
Yeah, both divisions are so top heavy that you know who the king of the mountain is on both divisions. And
Clash of the Titans coming soon, right? It's a lot like this weekend, Iowa Penn State. You talk about the games remaining, Iowa Penn State this weekend, and then really the road and the pathway to the college football playoff and certainly to the Big Ten championship game goes through Halloween weekend, right? Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, Michigan State, all four look really, really solid. We're obviously having a tailgate for the Ohio State, Penn State game. So go get your tickets real quick. Shameless plug. You'll have a great time. Get to meet me. Johnny better be there. I'm not doing this show anymore. And then Braxton Miller will be there. And it's going to be a great time. But anyways, that weekend is, you talk about three games that are going to dictate the landscape of college football. Iowa, Penn State this weekend, and then Halloween weekend, two huge, huge matchups.
Yeah, so you got Ohio State and Penn State, and then when you Michigan, Michigan State that same weekend, right, on Halloween?
Yeah, same weekend.
So and that's great for Ohio State any way you slice it, right, because they either get to, all right, say they beat Penn State, either – Michigan or Michigan State wins, they get to play said team soon who will be undefeated, and the other one who will likely be a one loss by then if Michigan doesn't throw up on itself this weekend against Nebraska. So, and then either way, you have the Penn State-Iowa matchup this weekend, as you talked about. Ohio State will have to play them both eventually because of the Big Ten championship game. So it's an undefeated at the time. I think best case scenario, Zach, for the Buckeyes, Iowa wins a close one, and then Penn State continues to go on and do what they do, maybe beats Michigan. You get to beat a one-loss Penn State team at the Shoe, and then what a class of the Midwest Titans when you get undefeated Iowa and one-loss Ohio State in the Big Ten championship.
And you know what, just what you, as you're saying it, if things go the way they should, which they never do, but if they do, you talk about strength of schedule. If Ohio State can win these games, I mean, you beat a Penn State team, number 4 in the country right now, they would be what, a one loss team or a two loss team then, right, to Ohio State and Iowa, if that happens. Then you beat a Michigan or a Michigan State team, one of them undefeated when you play them, the other with one loss from their Carnage game, right? You talk about a schedule. My goodness, and you're out of conference is Oregon, who I know they lost the game to Stanford, but that's still a solid football team. They'll win the Pac-12, I would imagine. And now you're talking about that strongest schedule in college football, and I don't know that it's close.
Yeah, it absolutely is. If you talk about, you have to play Michigan, you have to play Michigan State, you have to play Penn State, and you're going to eventually play Iowa, dunzo. And then the one loss you took was to Oregon. Well, that also helps your strength of schedule. So it's going to be a phenomenal – I think the Buckeyes can resurrect themselves. And I'll just say it, as the king of the Midwest is back. So I got the Cincinnati shirt on, but you know where my heart really is. It's in Columbus, right?
There's no doubt. I mean,
and the king of the Midwest, I think, a little premature, I think they're back on top of the heap. The best team in the Midwest as of right now, in my opinion, and I like them to win out.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree that they're the best team in the Midwest. I don't know that they win out, but I think they're the best team in the Midwest right now. And we saw a lot of improvements against Rutgers. It was Rutgers. And I know Michigan struggled in the second half against the same team, but we knew Ohio State was capable of this. If CJ Stroud was cooking, if Travion Henderson was the starting running back and they gave him considerable touches, if they threw it to Chris Olave and CJ actually hit him, right? And if the defense just shored up a couple things, mainly rotations, right? And so that's what happened against a lesser opponent. It's going to be if that can happen against a Penn State, a Michigan State, a Michigan in a rivalry game on the road. Like, there's so much to be learned about this Ohio State football team, but I agree, best team in the Midwest. So we'll end with this. And it's the question that I have, because I want to see if you're going to take your blinders off here for a second and be honest, or if you're going to go bleed scarlet and gray through and through. Is Michigan for real right now after a whooping of Wisconsin?
I think they're okay. I think they're a decent team. For real, as am I that scared of them? No, because I really think Wisconsin is so one-sided that you can just take their one thing away and just really hurt them. They're maybe a little better than I thought they were, but that Rutgers game and Ohio State's comparative game, I know you can't do the triangle effect, but it is a piece of data that I think you have to look at. I think they're a good team, good enough to look good nationally. I am not afraid of them. On a neutral side, I would take Ohio State by 17. Maybe that's blinders. Maybe that's me believing this C.J. Stroud was the C.J. Stroud I'll get every day for the rest of the season. But I think they're a good team. I think they're a good team that will do the Midwest a solid. I just don't take them over the Buckeyes right now.
Well, time will tell, right? They both have to play some pretty solid teams coming up. So I think that's a decent snapshot of where the Midwest brand is right now. And I appreciate you coming on as always, Johnny. Make sure you guys, if you haven't, check out the Scarlet and Great Empire on YouTube. Go check them out. Really good content, great videos, entertaining and knowledgeable. And as always, subscribe to this, like this, comment on this, text it to your friends, then come back on a ghost account, subscribe again, like it again, and do that like 5 more times and just keep subscribing and liking. We appreciate it. Thanks, Johnny, for coming on.
Thanks, Zach.
All right. Well, great show with Johnny. I hope you enjoyed the conversation and insight. I think I really think you guys, if you don't, you should listen to Scarlet and Great. Go check him out on YouTube. Obviously, I respect his opinion and think he does a great job. So check them out. But I want to talk a little bit more analytically about this weekend, kind of give you a college football rundown, what I saw. But before we get there, I should have opened the show with this. The Athletic just came out. They released some financials. Either way, they released them, and they have lost. Projected this year and the previous 2 years, the last 3 years, the Athletic that we all know and love, Nicole Auerbach, Stuart Mandel, our good friend, fat fuck, Ari Wasserman. The Athletic has lost $129 million. Over the last 3 years, they lost $40 million in 2020, $54 million in 2019. They're projected to lose $35 million in 2021, which puts them on a trajectory to possibly break even in about 2030. And those are projections. We know they're tanking, right? They're going downhill. It's just amazing what can happen if you go woke and go broke, right? They hate sports. They hate teams. They hate coaches. They hate the idea of even playing. They're pandering and committed to just awful, awful woke narratives. And it's like, who in the fuck wants to listen to Nicole Auerbach talk about sports? One, she's negative. Two, she's not very entertaining. Three, she doesn't know shit. And Stuart Mandel looks like a little fucking pipsqueak. And then Ari Wasserman looks like, I mean, if you want to give me a burger review, you know how Dave Portnoy does the pizza review? If Ari Wasserman wants to give me a burger review, I'm fucking tuning in, because that fat ass knows about food. I'll listen. But these journalists that get these journalism degrees that don't know anything about football or sports in general, it's amazing. And then they pound this narrative that the American public and sports fans are not into. Like, no one, not a fan in the world, wanted to hear about why the Big Ten shouldn't play and that them playing was a national tragedy, basically. Everyone's like, shut the fuck up. No, it's not. They should be playing, and this woke bullshit needs to get out of sports. Amazing. But you know what? It's that meme, and I posted it last night, of Dave Chappelle. It's like, you hate to see it, but even more than that, you love to see it. Amazing. Amazing that the Athletic is even. How do you do that? Like, do they just have like tons of investors just losing millions of dollars every year? Like, how do you operate? How do you pay the bills? I think about my company. I think we have like 6 employees. And like, if I don't make money, I literally would have to look at him and be like, I don't know what to tell you guys. Like, we're going to have to fucking sit this month out making paying salaries, I guess, or paying contracting fees. I don't know. How do you do that? And someone that listens to this show is way smarter than I am business-wise, but how do you lose $129 million and still pay Nicole Auerbach? How do you do that? Wild. But let's talk about the games this weekend. Kind of, I'm going to give you a quick run through what I saw, my thoughts, and then a couple analytics to back up my opinions. We'll start with the SEC and what I thought were going to be closer games. The Georgia-Arkansas game had me concerned, mainly because of the Vegas line. I mean, they were out everybody. They were out their quarterback. I mean, Stetson Bennett had to be the quarterback, right? JT Daniels was out. All their receivers were still out. They had James Cook and Zamir White, thank God, so they could run the ball. I don't know why Arkansas couldn't stop the run, but they could not. But this weekend reinforced my opinion, right? Arkansas, 14 missed tackles. Georgia, 5, right? Georgia wins. How about Bama Ole Miss? We'll run through missed tackles real quick. Bama Ole Miss tied the game with 18 missed tackles. And we'll talk about that when I get to the game, but sloppy defense on both sides of the ball. Bama's defense is not the real deal. You can just fucking shut that conversation down right now. OSU Rutgers, 20 missed tackles for Ohio State, 16 missed tackles for Rutgers. Sloppy as shit on defense for Ohio State, albeit I will say this, most of those came late in the game with younger players, and I had a breakdown, but I'm not going to go through it all, how many missed tackles everyone had, but sloppy defensive football, sloppy fundamentals, really, you know, evident of young players playing, right, and why they shouldn't be doing the rotational bullshit they started the year doing, right? Young players are not ready to play. 20 missed tackles against a Rutgers team is fucking terrible. Then you look at some great defenses, right? We already talked about Georgia's 5 missed tackles. Cincinnati and Notre Dame, both salty as fuck defenses. Cincinnati had 5 missed tackles. Notre Dame had 9. So both single digits. Cincinnati obviously won that. Michigan's defense looks fucking good now. Wisconsin, not dynamic. We'll talk about that game. But 3 missed tackles against Wisconsin for Michigan. And Wisconsin had 11. So that's all you needed to know right there. So the missed tackle conversation rings true. But the Georgia-Arkansas game, I mean, thank God that they had James Cook and Zamir White. Zamir White had 2 touchdowns. James Cook had averaged over 7 yards a carry. They didn't turn the ball over. They played a clean, fundamentally sound game, and Arkansas played sloppy. 14 missed tackles. I mean, you just can't win a game against a great defense like that unless your defense shows the fuck up. You can't let them run the ball on you. They had everybody out, and then Arkansas couldn't create a turnover. I mean, just a great job by Kirby Smart and his staff, a great win for Georgia, and Georgia is obviously the team to beat. I think we already knew that, but I think they're the team to beat in the country. Right now, they're number one in the country for me. Speaking of rankings, we talked about it with Johnny a minute ago, but I think some of these rankings, and if you, Josh Pate, I mentioned him on that show. Josh Pate, I think, is one of the best in sports media, right? I really do. I agree with almost every take he has, and his top... Honestly, his top 6 are about on par with what I think. I mean, he's got Iowa too low. He's got Iowa at 10, but Alabama, I think, here's my top, I'll say 4 right now. Georgia 1, Alabama 2, Ohio State 3. I would probably go Penn State 4, Cincinnati 5, Oklahoma 6, Michigan 7, Iowa 8, and then who am I missing? Oklahoma 9. Texas 10. That's probably what I would do. And you know what? I might go Texas 9, Oklahoma 10, even though Oklahoma hasn't lost. I think Texas is a better football team. We're going to find out about that in the Red River Shootout coming up this weekend. So that's my rankings, I guess. But this Bama game, so switching back to the SEC. Bama Ole Miss, sloppy as shit on defense. Brian Robinson Jr. was really the player of the game. 171 yards, 4 touchdowns, under 5 yards of carry. But this Ole Miss defense was suspect. We kind of thought that moving in. Bryce Young is still doing Bryce Young things, right? He had 19 of his 26 passes, so 73% of his passes were in the middle of the field. He completed 12 of 12 under 10 yards in the middle of the field. So the simple passes, he's completing them. He's efficient. He's not a great player yet. He's got arm talent, but he's not a great quarterback yet. He's not going to just slay you like a Joe Burrow, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields. You know, you go down the list. He's not one of those guys, not yet. Even in Trevor Lawrence's early days, young days, or Justin Fields' first year starting, he's not that guy. And their defense is suspect. I'm taking Georgia over Bama right now if they play. I really am. So that was a Bama Ole Miss game. Then you get into, we'll end with Ohio State Rutgers. Cincinnati Notre Dame, I mean, it was a defensive battle. Honestly, we knew. They both have good defenses. Cincinnati has a little bit better offense. Notre Dame's offense is putrid, and it was. I mean, you look at Desmond Ritter's game he played. He didn't play outstanding. He didn't really back up his shit talking. He was 4-6 on deep balls, which is really good, right? 67% on deep balls. That's going to win you the game right there. That's four huge plays in the throw game. He was only 3-for-8 on throws from 10 to 20 yards, whatever that percentage is. And really, he struggled under pressure. He was 3-for-7 under pressure. Cincinnati's offense, I think the most glaring stat moving forward, although, you know, we can go through their schedule, which we will in a minute, but really, honestly, they were 2-for-11 on third down. He didn't throw the ball exceptional. I'm concerned. I'm concerned for the end game, right? I mean, you look at their schedule. I just talked about it. Temple, UCF at home, at Navy, at Tulane should be, you know, relatively easy wins. Then Tulsa at home, at USF. USF stinks. SMU at home on November 20th. That's the one game, but it's at home. SMU's the one team who might be able to beat them, right? They're 5-0 right now. And then at ECU to end the year. So outside of a matchup with SMU, I don't see Cincinnati having even a struggle. I mean, SMU's the team. That's the game they got to win. And then, in my opinion, you got to put them in. This year of all years is a year where you can slide a group of five team in that playoff slot. I really think you can. So huge, huge win for Cincinnati. It really came down to Notre Dame turned the ball over three times and Cincinnati turned it over two. So they had an extra possession. They played a little bit better defense, a little bit better offense, and they win a game by 11. That was a big time football game in a big time environment. So great win for Luke Fickell. Huge win for Cincinnati's program. And how about, it's like I said it on Johnny's show. I mean, Brian Kelly is sitting there watching the program he built and brought up to on a meteoric rise take down his Notre Dame Fighting Irish under the Golden Dome. I mean, it's just, you hate, it's another thing. You hate to see it, but more than that, you love to see it. Is Brian Kelly done at Notre Dame? I mean, at some point, they want to make a playoff, right? At some point, they want to be competitive on the national stage. They are not in a conference. If you're not in a conference, what the fuck else are you playing for other than national competition, national relevancy? It's Notre freaking Dame, man. I mean, that's all they got is a national brand, national image, national championships. That's all they can play for. They can't play for the independent conference, right? They either need to join a conference or get rid of Brian Kelly and go after that national prowess, right? That's what they have to do. All right, to end the show, let's talk about kind of the Ohio State game, what we saw. We'll start with defense. Man, the good thing you saw was ball disruption, right? I talked about it before the game, and I've talked about it all year. The two things they have to learn how to do are disrupt the football and create turnovers and then pressure the quarterback, right? That's the two things they have to do. They had three interceptions. They forced two fumbles. They didn't recover either, but they disrupted the football. The Rutgers was terrible. I mean, man, you talk about looking like a different team than the second half against Michigan. They pressured the quarterback 18 times. My guy, Tylenol Williams, and if you don't know that background story, listen back. My autocorrect corrected Tyleek to Tylenol, so now that's his fucking nickname. He better get used to it. Tylenol Williams, creating headaches, was the only guy with a sack. He's really coming to his own, and I really think this defensive front needs to be dominant. With Haskell Garrett and Tylenol Williams inside, you put Zach Harrison and Tyreek Smith outside, along with you supplement in JTT, Javonte Jean-Baptiste, right? You supplement in Teron Vincent inside. I mean, you're talking about a deep group that should be dominant. They're just not getting home. They're not getting to the quarterback. At some point, they have to get to the quarterback. And that's, I mean, they're going to have to get sacks. I mean, the pressures that result in interceptions are ideal, right? But that's just what it is. You look at the offense, I mean, they still have drop issues in zone six. Jackson Smith and Jigba had three drops. Absolutely absurd. But you know what? The reemergence of Chris Olave kind of makes you feel better, right? He had two catches in two games. In this game, he goes for 120 and two touchdowns. It's about time they got him the ball and found a way. And you look at it, I think Ryan Day did an outstanding job at giving C.J. Stroud the Bryce Young game plan, right? 14 attempts in the middle of the field, six attempts outside the hash, right? So 70% of his attempts were in the middle of the field from 0 to 20 yards. That's what you need for him. you need easier completions, right? He was 1-for-1 on deep balls. They didn't ask him to launch it downfield because they didn't have to. They were getting big plays in the throw game, but from catch and runs. Travion Henderson went off for 9 yards a carry with a big time 44-yard run that we all watched. I mean, CJ Stroud was protected well all game, completed the ball 73% of the time versus base defense for 2 touchdowns. He completed 75% of the time versus blitz for 3 touchdowns. So he gashed Rutgers when they blitzed him. He gashed Rutgers when they played base defense. He really was on it. He was on point. And I think it was a great game for him and a great showing for CJ Stroud. That's what he needed, right? I'm not here to say that health had anything to do with it because they just had a smarter game plan. And all in all, it was what you wanted to see from Ohio State. You wanted to see just a great performance on both sides of the ball. 18 or 20 missed tackles is a problem. They'll get that fixed simply by only playing, you know, the starters, not playing young players, but also tackling a little better. They'll get back to basics in practice and clean that up. But what you're looking at is they got to avoid the upset against Maryland, have a nice little bye week, and then they got to prepare and gear up to go beat Penn State on Halloween. That's what it is. That Halloween weekend, you're talking about Iowa, Penn State this weekend, and then Michigan State, Ohio State, Penn State on the 30th. It's going to tell you everything you want to know about the landscape. So quick little run through, 15-minute run through of all the games after all the discussion from the YouTube episodes. So let me know how you feel about the episode. I don't want to do this often, but every now and then it's nice to sprinkle in the YouTube content for those of you that don't jump on YouTube. And if you haven't yet, go to YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube. Our goal is 10,000 followers by the end of season. If we get there, I'm going to do a massive, massive giveaway. Maybe it'll be a party. I don't know. But I'll figure that out as we get closer. But if you could subscribe on YouTube, like videos, watch them all the way through, comment on them, just help us out, help us grow. We are trying to do something different over here at Menace to Sports. We're damn sure not trying to lose $130 million in 3 years. That is not the business plan. That is not the business model. But anyways, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. As always, I appreciate you. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you're entertained. Hope you were educated. And if not, as we say, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
Watches downfield. It's Olave. He's got a touchdown, Ohio State.
Why am I talking to you? You're not even in football.
Yeah.
Did you even play to the high school level? You took journalism. It's a bunch of nerds interrupting people who know what they're doing.
It goes to the corner, dives to the corner. He didn't get there. No, they say he did. And Indiana wins.
The commissioner could literally punt a baby with his wingtips on. I'm still going to watch on Sunday.
Looking for the deep ball. Touchdown, Ohio State, Garrett Olsen.
I don't condone the man's actions, but it's football. I have to watch it. This is all I have.
On first down, it's Breece Hall. He doesn't go down. He might go all the way. He stays on his feet again and scores.
I wasn't going to hit a woman, but then that guy in the Ravens did it, so I guess it's okay.